I'd like to continue it in a series of messages about the issue of small steps. Been looking at small changes that we can make rather than huge big steps that we can have to make. Small steps that can make all the difference. Talked about that sometimes it's the small steps that really put us on a different path. Gave the illustration for those of you who may not have been here about if you calculated a 2% miss or 2% wrong in the trajectory toward the moon, that you would miss the moon by about 144,000 miles. It's a long, long way to miss. This is it's a huge miss, 2%. And yet, on the flip side of that, choices made in the right direction can put us in an equally positive and good path. To illustrate that story, I'm going to take a look at a guy named Naaman. And before you turn there, it will be in 2 Kings 5, verses 1 through 15. But before you turn there, I'd like to just kind of recount the story a little bit. In this story, there's a man from another country, from Aram. He is the commander-in-chief of that nation's army. He's the top. He is beloved by his nation and by his king because he has led them to victory time and time again. Over and over, it seems as if God's hand is on him as he's led them into battle. But one day, Naaman wakes up and there's a spot on his skin. And he's heard about spots like this, and he watches that spot. And soon it becomes apparent that looks a lot like leprosy. And that for Naaman was a death sentence, no cure. I know where this heads. He's stricken, grief-stricken. His wife is grief-stricken. His whole household. The way this story reads, there's really a lot of love in this story. Love from the king for this beloved commander. The household loved him deeply. And even a little girl that was a slave, who'd been taken from the land of Israel by this country. This little girl loved her master and her master's spouse. And she said, "Oh, that my master were in Israel, because he could find a man named Elisha, and that man could heal him." And at that moment, what seems like a death sentence maybe could be a pardon. Naaman goes to the king and simply tells him about the story. There's a prophet in Israel, and this slave girl says, "He can heal me." "By all means, go. Go." And he provides lots of silver and gold and clothing to take as a gift. Well, Naaman does go. He goes to Israel. Where does he look? He looks first at the capital, goes to the king, starts to explain why he's there, and even bears a letter from the king of Aram. And this letter reads something like this: "I'm sending my servant to you so that you can heal him." King of Israel, he is dumbstruck and panicked. "Who am I?" he says. "Am I God that I can cause somebody who's died to come back from death? Because that's what it was. It was a death sentence. Who am I? And with that, he actually tore his clothes to show how disturbed and grief-stricken he was. And back in the back of his mind, he's thinking, is this king over here just trying to pick a fight with me? What in the world is going on? Well, Elisha hears this story. And he sends word to the king, why are you tearing your clothes? Just send them to me. And that's exactly what he did. So here goes this man, Naaman, along with his entourage, all his gold, all his silver, all his horses, all his chariots, and he pulls up to Elisha's house, to his doorstep, and sends somebody to the door and asks for help. The prophet doesn't even come out to greet him. He stays in the house. He sends a servant out to talk to him. This is what my master says. Go down to the Jordan, bathe yourself in it 7 times, and you'll be healed. Really? That thing. I am supposed to go down there and go into that. He's incensed. This guy won't even come out to see me. I'm getting the runaround. I went to the Capitol, now I'm here. This guy won't come to see me. He says I should go jump in a lake. What? What is this? Is this some kind of cosmic tease? God, what are you doing? And with that, the story says he just goes off in a huff. There are some people who loved him, his servants who came with him. And they went after him and they implored him and said, dear Father, it's an interesting change of words. Dear Father, if he had asked you to do something great, wouldn't you have done it? Why not do what he says? Bathe and be cleansed. This produces a turnaround, and he goes back, stops at this muddy river. It's irksome to him. He remembers the clear running rivers in Aram. And he has to go down into this mess. But he does. And he bathes. He goes in, he comes out. He goes in, he does this 7 times. And he's healed. The story tells us that he's healed remarkably and that his skin becomes like that of a young boy. Well, he's grateful. Death sentence commuted. And he goes back to the prophet and he begs him for the honor of giving him something. And he says, I know now that the only true God is the God of Israel. That's our story today. And I think it illustrates what we've been talking about, some changes, some turns that are most important for you and for me to take. It's making room for God's slow work sometimes in these choices that we make. We're going to look at how small changes can ruin or renew your life. Now let's read the story together, and you can read aloud with me. Now Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. Now bands from Aram had gone out and had taken captive a young girl from Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "If only my master would see the prophet who's in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy." Naaman went to his master and told him what the girl from Israel had said. "By all means, go," the king of Aram replied. "I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So Naaman left, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of clothing. The letter that he took to the king of Israel read, "With this letter I am sending my servant Naaman to you so that you may cure him of his leprosy." As soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his robes and said, "Am I God? Can I kill and bring back to life? Why does this fellow send someone to me to be cured of his leprosy? See how he's trying to pick a quarrel with me?" When Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his robes, he sent him this message, "Why have you torn your robes? Have the man come to me, and he will know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman went with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a messenger to say to him, "Go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you will be cleansed." But Naaman went away angry and said, "I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the spot, and cure me from my leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than any of the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed?" So he turned and went off in a rage. Naaman's servants went to him and said, "My father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then when he tells you, 'Wash and be cleansed'?" So he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan 7 times, as the man of God had told him, and his flesh was restored and became clean like that of a young boy. Then Naaman and all his attendants went back to the man of God. He stood before him and said, "Now I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel." That is our story, and an important story. This setting, again, shows us that there he had discovered that he was now a bearer of leprosy. And it was a grievous discovery. It was a It was a grievous discovery, a death sentence. And he's told about a prophet in Israel, who could speak, who could heal, because he was in contact with the God, the true God of Israel. His first steps, I think, were these. And they are the kind of steps that we often hope for. We, when facing extreme difficulty in our lives and we see no way out, keep within us, buried within us, a hope that somehow God has a way through the circumstances. And there are times when we've exhausted all of our resources that we are open to new solutions. Even the solutions suggested by a little servant girl, they were open to. It's like, it couldn't hurt. Why not? Why not try? And so his first steps are simply to say, I'll try it. I'll go to the king and see if I can be excused. And he takes his first step and clears that hurdle wonderfully. The king is supportive of it. The king can't think of life without him. He must respond. He wants him to go. That must have been a humbling thing, however, to go to this little country that you've been raiding and to ask them for help. It's difficult. His first step really is a step out of some pride and a step toward humility. We see also in this that there's a keeping of hope alive. The second part of the story is the shaping of Naaman, and that involved knocking on the wrong door. Here he goes. He goes up to the king of Israel with all these gifts and a letter in hand. It's like he'd been sent from one head of state to another head of state, as it should be. All the decorum, all the prestige. I am the representative of this kingdom militarily, and it's fitting that I should bear this to the king of Israel. And he finds out he's knocking on the wrong door. King of Israel says, I can't help you. There's nothing I can do about that. We know where that goes, where that leads. And this must have been a difficult step for him as well. It had to have been something that kind of pounded on his pride again. Really? You say this prophet lives out there. He doesn't even live in your capital city. I've got to go out there. Okay. I guess I've come this far. I'll do it. And so he keeps hope alive, and even in the face of knocking on the wrong door. Now we come to the shaping of Naaman when he gets there. It's very interesting. Elisha sends out this servant to deal with the head of state. This is all wrong. This is so wrong. This is humiliating. Absolutely humiliating. The guy won't even come see me. And now he sends a servant out and tells me I'm supposed to go bathe in that filthy thing. That river. It's a mud hole. Why should I do that? That is one of the stupidest things I have ever heard. It doesn't seem to have a lot of science to it, does it? For fixing disease. There isn't a lot of science to it. But it is targeted at something in Naaman that needed fixed. It's strategically targeted at his pride, and probably with that pride some anger issues, because he was torched, he was livid that he was being expected to jump through all these hoops 7 times. Really, what's with that? Some magic number? 7 times? I can hear it now. Huh, guess what we got Naaman to do. You won't believe this. He stopped by here, and that hated enemy of ours, I told him to go jump in the lake 7 times, and he did it. You know, that stuff like that could be going through his mind. Take advantage of a person who's hurting. Can you imagine? All those things must have been part of the anger and the hate buildup that was going on in his life at the moment. Taken advantage of. But it's part of Naaman's shaping. Because God's going to work in his life and deal with these issues about pride and anger. To Naaman's credit, his need and motivation to change takes him these extra steps to Elijah's home and also eventually to consider the appeal of his servants. But his patience and his perspective ends with the prophet saying, "Your flesh will be restored to you and you will be clean." He's furious, and he went away thinking, surely I thought he would come out and he would speak to his God and he'd wave his hands around, you know, a big kind of thing. We're told the prophets in Elijah's day went out in the morning when they wanted to try to get their gods to do something, and they danced around and they hollered and they waved their hands all day. They even, in fact, cut themselves as a sign of devotion, and they did this, and that was known to Naaman. He expected some big spectacle. I'm a head of state. Can't you produce something better than go jump in the lake? But no, it wasn't to be. And it was because God was healing other things in him. Not just his skin, but his heart. The scale of this miracle is amazing and unquestioned. God alone could effect such an incredible cure. But Naaman had to have a heart change. And it came through these servants, the unlikely people in his life. Like I said, I think this story's full of love. I think these servants couldn't bear to not have him around. And they were wise, much wiser than their master. They came to him and appealed to his sense of greatness and machismo. If he asked you to do a great thing, wouldn't you do it? Well, of course I would. Well, why not bathe and be clean? And he responds, and he does that. There are times when small things, small choices, lead us to respond. I don't know what it would have been like for him to come out of that water. I don't know what it would have been like to actually have stood on that bank and be wanting to go in the first time. Here's a man who's come with this great entourage. He has all of his soldier gear, probably. And so he sheds his robes and every implement of war, and he lays it down, and he's naked before God, and he starts into the water. What a humbling experience. And then to have to come out and go back in, come out, go back in. But things happened when he came out that last time, and he was astonished. And I think God said about some things in his heart, a humility that was forged by the grace of God. There's only one reason that he received this. It was by the grace of God. We're told in the story that he even goes back to Elisha and he wants to give him all these gifts. And Elisha won't hear of it. No, there's not going to be any gifts. This is a story about the grace of God reaching him at his point of need. You don't have to pay for this. This one's on me, God says. This one's on me. And then God works in his life in a remarkable way. Small things do count. Small things make big differences. I'd like to just have us take a brief moment here and reflect on the story. We'll just look at a few questions. What do you see first? What does this story tell us about God? He uses humbling things in our lives to make a difference. That's hard to believe, isn't it? At times, when it's so galling, when it's so difficult, it's hard to believe that, but that's just like God. Okay? So God has a bigger picture, able to heal even Israel's enemies. Okay, the second one, what does the story tell us about humans? Pride is our big what? Our big enemy. It is ever present. Pride is a tough one.
We expect things to happen the way we see it in our minds, and we're not usually open to things that aren't on our agenda.
We expect things to happen the way we expect things. We want them to. God is creative. Yes, creative in the way that he works. Was there anything new in this story to you? Okay. He's the God of all, and he reaches out to not just his chosen. Could you hear that over here? Out of this young slave girl's tragedy of being abducted, God did a big work. Sure. He was loved. Interestingly, that is often the best atmosphere for change to go on in our lives. Knowing that we are loved deeply by God is a good place to change, isn't it? That's a good place from which to change. It isn't performance-based. It's based on wanting to please someone who loves you. Okay. Last week we had a powerful presentation in the area of sexual purity and the effects of pornography. In your bulletin is a list of resources in our community that are available for those who are struggling with sexual purity. One of the things that last week did, I think, for many of us, was kick off the question, what's my next step? What's my next step? I imagine that between last week and this week, there are some things that might have been rolling around in your mind about next steps. I would invite you to read through that resource list and see if there are some next steps that are possibilities. I know that this narrows the focus of this message to just focus on this, but at least we should think about ongoing application. It would be sad to have had such a great presentation on this area as we had last week, and for it to just go be for naught, for us to just move on. It is a great time when we have heard what we heard to make some new next steps. Come back to this big picture. Naaman found healing. But he had to take some steps. He had to take some steps that were quite galling to him. And sometimes steps in this area are galling to those struggling. To go to a group may hit the area of pride. You have to acknowledge that there is something that needs some work. So there's the idea of maybe going to a group in one of our community area groups, or maybe a group going there and coming back and telling us what you've discovered. And this can be for both those who've been caught up in sexual impurity and for those who are suffering the results of it because of their spouses being caught up in it. Yes. Okay. So there's possibilities there. I want to make myself available to anyone who wishes to talk about next steps. And I think it's good always to take next steps. It might mean a men's or a women's support group here. Please be thinking about next steps. Going back to our story, remember it was galling. It was difficult. It was most difficult for him. Tipping points. Could you be at a tipping point in your life? God wanting something for you in this area or some other area. Could you be at a tipping point? And you know, tipping points are just that. They're tipping points. They're things that help it move this way or that way. One of the things that causes it to stay the same or get worse are these issues of anger and pride. Those things get in the way of us being healed. We have to acknowledge what it is that God is showing us about our lives to be able to move on. Two of the things that improve a tipping point being a positive thing are humility and yieldedness. To yield, to say, God, I yield. And yielding may not be easy when it comes to the issue of anger. I think one of the things people who are angry find most difficult to admit is that they're angry. And especially to go to a group for it. I don't need that. That's the common theme, the common response. I don't need that. And yet, maybe. So tipping points are important. Yieldedness makes a difference. There are ways that we can, this is a picture of a torpedo, we can torpedo our progress. And that's to stay stuck or on the edge. But we don't realize that it's precarious to be at a tipping point and on the edge, and that it could go in a way that we don't want it to go. The couple who presented last Sunday talked to us about where it went in a powerful, powerful way. And they are such an example of how God redeemed their marriage, their relationship. They are a vitalized couple in love with each other. I did get an email from them, some of those resources you see in your bulletin. And with this, I'll just give a couple of thoughts. They said they thanked us for being able to share here. And as they drove home, reflecting on the issues that had arisen, and even just discussions that they were able to have with people here. Jody remembers a good friend of Dave saying that he would relapse and relapse until he came to the realization that he could and must never do this again, and that he'd figure out a way to never do it again. The relapse issue, you remember she talked about, and how important it is to say no, and then to get on a path that includes some accountability and to move on. She says, I think that's the key to sobriety in this area. And she says, we have to realize that we are never going to use porn again. The other thought we had was that those whom we have known over the past years who took drastic measures to change their lives regarding media, managing their eyes in public, and anything else they needed to do to stay sober, are the ones who stay sober. It's not amazing, it's just true. And so whatever it takes, those groups that are mentioned there, some steps that they mentioned there, I think one of the things that Dave found was most helpful to him was to be in good, supportive, loving, intimate relationships of accountability with men. That's what helped him most. So, or women, as the case may be. Yeah, whoever has the problem. Let's bow for a word of prayer. I'd like to invite you to come. Let's pray together. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for this example of someone who in spite of their revulsion about the way they had to seek your healing, they did it. They took the necessary steps, and you brought them home and brought them, made them whole. We realize that's true for us as well. We are your needy ones. We stand before you broken and yet loved by you. And again, Lord, it's your love that makes us have hope that we can change and from this place of acceptance see new things wonderful things happen in our lives. Strive with us until we make those steps necessary for our healing and good progress in becoming like your son, Jesus. Amen.